Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, 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 everybody. How you doing? Welcome to this week's episode of Radio Established Dressed as, Radio Established or Dressed Like. Why did I not get that out? Like, I don't know the name of the show. Freaking 11 years in, I should be able to spit that off the top of the dome without interruption or anything of that nature. But it got a little jumbled up this morning. That's okay. It be that way sometimes. I was telling the crew I had to apologize to them. I had to apologize to them because, you know, I'm out here trying to pass time, stack a couple of chips, make a little bit of dough. And one of the things that I've been doing here lately is working a part-time gigging. And that has taken up a good portion of my time. Normally we talk quite regularly throughout the week and stuff like that. Every now and again, it just doesn't happen that way. This so happened to be one of those weeks. And I was saying to Thomas this morning, I was like, yo, you know, normally I'm up, ready, and on Thomas's show as well, but that didn't happen. I caught the very tail end of it, but it's cool. But again, Thomas and his crew were in line with what Rodney and I talked about last night, which was accountability. So that's what their show was about. So I told Thomas, I was like, yo, you got to get out of my head, son. Like, y'all can't be stealing our topics all the bag on time. But at the same time, as he was up roaring and ready last week, it's a blessing because at least he's up and his juices are already flowing. So you get that honed in perspective from him first thing in the morning, where the rest of us very well may be struggling because, you know, it's extra early for Rodney to be up. Again, I'm
got that right.
Going through what I go through. I'm going through what I'm going through. And then, you know, Rashi is still being mom and grandmom. So, you know, sometimes it's a test. So to have someone already geared up and cruising down the highway is definitely helpful. But that's what it is, man. And I was hoping he was on already. And I did mess up, too, because I was supposed to drop the drops this morning. And the reason I wanted to drop the drops this morning was Snoop's birthday is today. Happy birthday to Uncle Snoop. But Talib Kweli's birthday was like 2 weeks ago, and I did not acknowledge that on air. I acknowledged it other ways, but I didn't acknowledge it on air, so I wanted to shout out to Talib Kweli. He's always been good to me, and, you know, I just wanted to return the favor in kind, and I wanted to acknowledge Dan Ringo. I don't know if I said, I don't know if I talked about Dan's birthday last week. Dan turned 50 this year. And he's a friend of the show. He's a friend of mine, good friend of mine. Again, he's 50. We've known one another next 29 years. We've known one another 29 years. And he included me. He was kind enough and gracious enough to include me in a video that he posted of the folks that matter to him, which, you know, matters to me. So, you know, that's huge, man. One of the things that I'm getting, and I may have said this before, and I have, you know, you're going to hear it again. If I haven't, then you're going to hear plenty more times. But one of the things that I'm getting as I get older, I'm getting more and more grateful for the people that allow me to be in their lives. You know what I'm saying? Rodney, you and I go back, what is it, 26 years now. And, you know, for a raw street kid, because I was a street kid, you know, I may have looked different, may have moved a little different, but I was a street kid. To be around and around, meaning above ground still, and having people put up with me still, whom I viewed having a much more rounded approach to life and just themselves, is a blessing to me. You know what I'm saying? I'm enjoying every single moment of it. Every single moment of it. Because none of us are guaranteed to live. So one of the things that I've taken when people introduce themselves to me and they're like, hey, nice to meet you, I respond in kind with, it's nice to be met. You know, because the other side of it is I would be dead. It's not about being braggadocious or anything like that. It's about acknowledging the fact that I'm grateful for the life that I'm able to live day in and day out, even with the ups and downs and the struggles that we all go through. You know, we all have those rough patches. We all have those times when we wake up and we go outside and we go to start the car and it doesn't want to start, or we go outside and we try to get in the car and you got a flat or you got two flats. You trying to figure out how to do it and get to work on time because you're already 6 points in, and maybe you only get 7 at your job, and you know you're trying to figure that out. So you're scrambling to catch an Uber or whatever. You know, those things are facts of life, and to be able to continue to push through that, to be able to see another sunset, another moonrise, it's a beautiful thing. It's really a beautiful thing, man. I am even in this situation that I find myself in Charlotte, I'm still very much appreciative of the life that I have. You know, Rodney, you and I were talking last night. We spoke on this last week. You know, things continue to go up and up and up and up, except for your damn paycheck. And robbing from Peter to pay Paul, who then gives your money to Charles, and then you stick Charles up around the corner to get it back. I mean, man, it's crazy out here, bro, but, you know, that's what some people are doing. You know, I loved your idea and what you're doing. You know, share that with everybody. Right? So what are you doing one month out of the year, what you say you're doing?
So I think it's important to stay in touch with the everyday people, especially as a voter and someone active in the community. And this is something that I recommend everyone in elected office does, and everyone with a few extra chips in their pocket, is to take 1 month out of the year where they live on the salary, the medium income of whatever area they're in. Don't front load and pay up stuff in advance, but 1 month live on the economy as if you had the salary of the medium income in that area. And I tell you, it humbles me every time I do it, but it also reconnects me, and I'm always surprised at that I've lost some connection with the realities of the day-to-day lives of the average person in this country.
What's the biggest, you know, not negative, but the biggest slap in the face when you do that? Like, what's the biggest thing you're like, oh, God, dang, you know, woo. You know what I'm saying? What's that thing that makes you go woo or gives you pause whenever you take
well,
this initiative?
You know, just to be honest, it's just counting my money, where the other 11 months out of the year, if I see it, you know, within reason, I just get it.
Right.
I don't really think about
right.
it. And I look at my bank account, I can spend without having to transfer money around because I know there's
right.
going to be enough money in it. But during this 1 month, I have to actually start looking, and then there's things that I might want to purchase that I have to put off, or I may have to just hold off on stuff. And not that that's bad, but it's just, it's different. And then it does, you know, when I fill up my tank, you know, right now it hurts filling up my tank. Just thinking about what am I going to spend my money on for this month. And sometimes I'll do it longer than a month, because I do think it's important that as we progress in life and our income increases and our lifestyle changes, inevitably you do, and it's natural, just to lose touch with the everyday person. If I need to go to the grocery store, I go to the grocery store and I buy whatever it is that I need and probably most of what I want. I was thinking about this Christmas, and I said, man, I don't even have a wish list for Christmas, because pretty much everything, I have everything that I need, and I have a whole lot of what I want. And I said, man, that might even take the fun out of Christmas. So I think I do really think it's important that those who are doing well in life take a month every year to live sort of off the economy, live like the average person. Because we're citizens and we're voters. And sometimes when you're living a good life, your perspective is different. So you may think it's this thing or that thing is okay or not needed. But then when you get sort of that re-engagement with reality and you find out, well, wait a minute, the money that I have, this is what the average person has. So if I'm having to pinch my pennies, then that means that the average person every day is having to pinch pennies because just to live a normal life, not an extravagant life, just a normal life. And I don't think that you should have to pinch pennies if you're making the median income in this country. Even if you were making the average income in your area, I don't think you should have to pinch pennies. You're working every day, and yet you're struggling.
Staying out of trouble.
Do I get my insulin? Man, I'd like to go to the movies, but I went to the movies last month, so I got to wait. And then, you know, it's just things like
that. The movies is like a $60, $80 endeavor?
And well, that's no bullshit. By itself.
What? Man, them tickets, you know, two tickets to the movies for two adults with no discount is like $30-$40? Two tickets for two adults, no discount. $30-$40, easy. Easy. I'm talking I'm no matinee, no senior citizen, no military. Depending on where you're going to the movie, it can be anywhere from 18. Well, I would say on the low end, it's probably $14, $15. Well, yeah, so it's like $40. Yeah, for two adult, average everyday adults to go to the flipping movie, it's like $40 just to get in the
door. Don't forget the popcorn.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Just to get in the freaking door, it's like $40. Like you said, Rodney, you add the popcorn, the nachos, a soda, and some juju beans. Man, that's like $60-$80. It is crazy. And you better share the damn soda and the popcorn. Because if you're trying to do popcorn for two people, sodas for two people, juju beans for two people, that's easy $80. That's damn near $100 to go to the movies. The movies. Popcorn, ladies and gentlemen, was depression food. It's cheap. It's cheap as hell. You're being charged $15 for a tub of popcorn that cost them all of $1.50 to make. If that. If $1.50, I'm including ingredients, electricity, the whole nine. The whole nine. For a tub of freaking popcorn. It's depression area food because it was cheap. It's insane, man. Oh Lord forbid. You know they super fancy now. They have some of them. You can sit down and they bring food to you and the whole. Man, you talking $100 for and that movie damn sure better be good. I'm sorry, Rashi. What were you saying?
No,
I haven't spoken yet. But I do want to let you know that whole industry almost went belly up during the pandemic. When you can't put a butt in a chair, you still paying for the reels. You got to keep the lights on. You can turn off the main, but you can't stop the bill. You still got to turn over that merchandise, and they're going dusty and old in the kitchen. The nasty hot dogs was getting greener. And so you have to see, how are they going to even be able to come back? How are they going to be able to reintroduce the idea, that feeling I was getting up with your friends Saturday after you done cleaned up, right? And then you get yourself cute, and then y'all go down to the mall, to the strip mall, to the mall, whatever. And then y'all go to the movies, and then you come home and have fun. That was America. Literally going shopping at the mall and going to the movies with your friends was quintessential America. So now they could charge you for anything that make you feel like an American should cost, right? That's the point.
Uh-huh.
And so now Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, Tubi, Crackle, Freeform, Disney Plus.
Don't put Tubi.
You don't play games with Tubi. That's my app. Don't play games with them. Oh, but you got Pornhub though. I bet you got the app anyway.
And you know it.
So you get the idea that our watch eyes ain't even on the silver screen no more. It's on this little blue screen. And so why? And then they really messed up when they gave us the capability of interacting with our television and casting it off of the handheld onto the wall. So we are our own movies, right? Why in the world would we get up and go breathe recirculated air and half of us be like, turn this shit down? At least I do. I'm like, it's just too loud. It's too loud to enjoy. So, yeah, you're right. They need to be accountable for how much they charge, but we also need to know that it's going the way of, you know, a lot of stuff that we used to do, soapbox racing. And come on, Mr. Rodney, help me out. What was yesterday America's fun, you know? So whatever yesterday America was about, it saved itself out.
Rodney ain't that old.
What? Well, no, I didn't say
Rodney ain't that
old. Oh, I'm saying he would have engaged in play. He would have had, there was a different idea of what's fun in America. Some of it still remains. We still like to watch sports play. We still like, but there was a time when you would go to the park more often. The park used to be where it's at. You could find the whole community at some point at the neighborhood park with their children, the kids playing. And I don't know if you've been to your neighborhood park lately, but it ain't that. So there's a lot of different ideology now of what it means to be at play in America. And the movie was already fading fast after the inception of Netflix and whatnot. So they were really trying to capture us with all those different Marvel series, and for some reason the horror genre loves the silver screen. They rarely will give up a chance to be scared in a room together. But most people now, especially them romantic people, they don't want to be up in their hood. They want to be Netflixing and chilling. They don't want to be
That's unless you are a representative with your boyfriend watching the children's play and you give him a hand job. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead. My apologies.
Exactly.
That wasn't a movie, though.
That ain't the only thing we about to price out. You know, we about to price a whole lot of things out, is what I call it. When the act of engaging into that play only becomes possible for people who don't have an entertainment budget. It's unlimited, okay? Most of us are capping out at $200 or $300.
But Rashi, the question is, what about your budget in general? Because, you know, here we are trying to survive, just trying to survive. It's not even about killing it, crushing it. It's just about making it. And when you can barely make it, because, again, everything's going up except for your paycheck, price of food, the price of it doesn't even have to be entertainment at this point. As I was telling Rodney last night, just to watch television, because of the way the signals have been changed, you have to have cable. Nowadays, in order for you to have cable, you have to have the internet. More often than not, some form of the internet you need in order to have cable for most Americans. Some folks are still in the lane of they can have one without the other. I don't know how the hell they're living like that, but they are. So, you know, your cable price is going up. Your internet price is going up. Even the streaming services are going up. Netflix just announced it's raising its prices again. Everybody's panicking, and I'm going to tell you why, because Amazon's about to launch the internet. I think next year. I think they have to launch it next year. So everyone's panicking, and they're trying to get their slice of the pie, lock you in with these damn mandatory contracts and all that type jazz so you don't just jump ship and hop with Amazon. I think that Amazon is going to go beyond that. I think Amazon is going to go full telecom. I'm making a prediction right now. If they spin off that internet service provider into another company, because they are going to go full telecom, I think they're going to offer internet, cell phone, and every damn thing else. And it's going to be so cheap that it's going to break everybody else's pocket. The only remainders will probably be T-Mobile and Verizon. And I say that because T-Mobile is an international company, so they have that to always fall back. And Verizon is just so hardened in American culture, the quote-unquote elite, that it will stick around for a while. It's similar to the iPhone and Android. The iPhone only sells best in America. It sells flat every place else in the world. But because in America you have the folks who want to be elitist, present company excluded, or they want to feel like elitist, they focus on the iPhone. Every place else is like, I just need a damn phone that works and that I can afford. So Android, here I come. And that's why they do what they do worldwide. But I foresee Amazon, after they get, because they already started launching the satellites. I think that happened. They did the test a couple of months ago, but they went full-fledged launch. I want to say I saw that article last week. So it's been within the last month they went full-fledged launch. And they're under scrutiny from the FCC to get it up and done. So you will see repeated launches with payloads of Amazon satellites going up. But I see in the very near future where you can go to Amazon, much everything. You know what I mean? And to be honest with you, I think that puts more pressure on Walmart than anybody. Because just like I said about AT&T Verizon. Costco has a following that is going to follow them. And I would say BJ's of the price clubs would go before anybody because they have such a small footprint. But the way Costco is moving and building, they can withstand a barrage from I don't see Walmart necessarily.
You know, Costco ain't going nowhere because you can buy enough toilet paper to build another apartment. So no. Because
they're
not about the individual consumer, though. You have to hear that Costco, I mean, you can go in there and buy you 75 packs of toilet paper if you want to. But Costco is for businesses. Costco is where industry should be shot. Costco is where you buy, you know, if you have a small business, but it's not, but it's too large for you to be going up in Walmart and buying toilet paper for it.
Right.
You go to Costco and you get a pallet for each location that you do. It's not for individuals. They love being in there eating them free snacks, buying literally 19 packs of ketchup, bottles of ketchup at a time. But Costco ain't for that. But what's going to happen in general, Lee, you're right. We can't sustain business at this rate. When we saw that, when the pandemic came and people started losing their jobs and those jobs never came back, I can tell you at least 20 mom-and-pop restaurants alone that are closed now in Kansas City because the people who used to go there and eat don't have a job. And so, and the people who do still have a job never did consider adding that place to eat to their new repertoire. And so... your four customers can't keep you open. It takes turnover. It takes revenue in the area. And Kansas City got hit really hard with the pandemic. And I know we weren't alone. So now we get to recalibrate, and I think it's smart because we don't need 19 different types of peanut butter. All you need is at best two that do crunchy and two that do creamy, and everybody else needs to go make something fucking else. You need that vegan, you need the vegan,
you need the almond because people
don't
have
almond butter no more. You make almond butter and you make sunflower butter and you make, but y'all can't all fucking make peanut butter because it don't.
But you
got to
be careful.
Be peanuts. And number two, don't make no sense. Your merchandise is just going to sit there. Jiffy's going to get his money. Peter Pan going to get his money. Best Choice is always going to get their money for commodity. And then your nuanced peanut butter you made, Skippy, it's going to go straight out of business.
Go ahead, brother.
We got to be careful when we talk about business because I think we kind of forget monopolies. We also forget this idea too big to fail as well. Remember when we had to bail out the banks because they were too big? And so when we cheer on downsizing these ideas, you got to always remember it's subsidiaries. And subsidiaries may be connected to a company but may be a different unit. They have a different set of employees and the different people that's employed for the rollout. So we start saying that we should shut certain things down. Remember, those people have to go find jobs elsewhere. And I remember working in telecommunications. I hated when the bank started having issues and all the bank CEOs fell into telecommunications because that killed all the money in telecommunications. They didn't have a respect for telecommunications employees because they came from places that were typically non-union shops. And that's how we got all of these mergers and some of these companies laid off. I just think going back to Amazon and a lot of these larger companies, and this, I say this every week on this show, this just goes and shows what type of Congress and Senate that we have. Because it's great that a company can come with a lot of ideas, but we should never have a monopoly. We should never have one-stop shop because typically that messes with the rates of service. Yes, you can drop the rates low. I remember Comcast coming in at $10 a line when they were trying to get into this market before they switched to Xfinity. Once they kind of ran Quest out of business and CenturyLink to a certain extent, they lowered their business. Then they raised those rates on those lines. So you come in low. And that's how you run your competition out. And then when your competition is out, then the rates go crazy. And so we have to always be mindful of that when we talk about business. And as American people, we should be asking as consumers for the best prices, product as possible, and we should be asking for diversity in companies so we can make sure that each other are employed.
I gave you your props in the conversation with Roger, because you hit on something that was like spot on, dog. And you said how as we focus more on capitalism, we focus less on democracy. And my conversation with Rodney last night was this game is set up to where you are running around like a chicken with your head cut off, a dog chasing your tail, just to make your basic needs. And as you're doing that, you're failing to realize, because you have little time to realize, that you are losing your liberty left and right, right and left. I said all that and transitioned from that to this is one of the reasons that I don't get these people, Rashi, no offense to you, sis, but I don't get these people that don't want a couple. Like, you are, I don't see it. I don't understand it. There's no flipping way. I want to be running around crazy trying to make ends meet by myself just for the sake of being by myself. Now, that doesn't mean that I couple with somebody out of desperation to help meet my bills. However, it makes sense to find someone that I could build something with so that these bills get freaking paid and we still have time to live and enjoy our lives. And unfortunately, that does not happen often when you're out here fighting this fight by your damn self. You know what I'm saying? You need to be with someone to help them, help you, help your entire family. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is madness.
Well,
to me.
I mean, I hear
I don't get it.
But I didn't couple with a person. I coupled with family. The new trend is you don't have to be unequally yoked with somebody who is taking advantage or that you are able to take advantage of. You can go take it to family. Live with your sister. Live with your mama. Live with your brother. Two brothers, a sister, and an auntie. It don't have to be your next victim. It can be just family, a family affair. That's all I want you to hear.
Okay. But your family
have varying
responsibilities, not strictly to you.
Mm-hmm.
When you couple with somebody else, you choose responsibility or to one another. So, yes,
right.
That can work. It can work. Absolutely. But in the long and the short, I would protest that is not feasible, nor is it beneficial to our community as a whole. Because from your family, if you are of age, you cannot bear, well, some people bear children. What's that young girl, the rapper, that got two kids by like her third cousin or some crap like that? And she talk about, that's just how it is in the country. I met this dude, we had our second kid in, I'm talking to my grandma. She's like, well, you know, that's like your cousin. 2-3 removed, some crap like that. Like, okay, like that's some, yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
Rodney, I will hold on. I will lean to Rodney on this, not because of his maturity, but because of his time in the South. Rodney, was that common down there in Supply? Were you straight up marrying your cousin?
Anything at the third cousin is optional.
Fair game. Anything at the third cousin. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Third cousin on down, you had to leave it alone. But after third cousin, it, you know, it's whatever happens, happens.
Okay. All right. That's
this coming
hey,
up.
Look, I ain't
well, at least
like
you don't have to. Y'all can ride into the family reunion together, booed up, you know.
Exactly.
Okay,
well,
but
I mean,
hear
well,
you.
You know, I mean, things happen in small places because that's just typically how it happens in general. And we're not the only group of people that have this issue. White folks,
absolutely
Asian folks,
right.
They typically
right,
in smaller
absolutely
places. But I will say the difference between us and everyone else, and I said this a long time ago and caused quite a bit of stir inside of my group, The Rant, is that black people understand English way too well. And we don't speak another language. And so since that's the only language that we only understand, that's all we really – we pretty much are buying into all of the propaganda that other groups, because they English is their second or third language, they have other mediums that they operate in that don't speak in English, so they don't have to necessarily buy into the hoopla. We're talking about survival. We're talking about us versus white supremacy / racism, and a lot of what we're saying and doing is anti what would help us defeat white supremacy racism. You know, this is about population. This is about generational wealth and building. This is about building a stronger village. And we can't do those things in the capacity when everybody's going for self, when everybody's talking about my pain. We just can't do it. And I say that because when we look at the economics, you either make the choice of learning group economics with your significant other, your community, your family, whatever, or you get forced into it. Typically, when you're forced into it, you don't do so well. When you make a choice, not only do you make the choice, you typically get educated on it, and then you excel in that arena. A lot of us right now, because English is our only language, we only know what we see on television, and we start emulating those things. Right? And when the rug gets pulled from up under us, there's going to be a lot of people that's going to have to settle with abusers, manipulators, and liars, because when they had a chance to choose, they refused to choose, and now they're forced in survival. And in survival, you typically don't get the best outcomes or the best options.
How we always been. We always been holding on to each other, crabs in this barrel, right? We've always been, since we were excommunicated from our home, we have been, well, no, that means that they pushed us out. Since we were forcibly removed from our place of being, we've been crabs in a barrel all over the world, little bitty buckets of crabs, pulling, fighting, trying our best to do whatever. So not only do we in America only understand English, every time we are pulled out of our native reality, we adopt 100% to the reality of the culture we get dumped in. If we were in Spain, we would not do nothing but Spaniard, you know, work for the ways of the Spaniard. So it's not even that. It's something about the nature of the African that once he leaves Africa, It's all about the new place now. Very little of what was do they go back and search. And we get it in growth in spurts. We had it for a minute in the 60s. Young people did it for a hot second in the 90s. We was wearing our African medallions, African hair, African iconography on our clothes. And then it went away for a long time. And then Black Panther came out. And then we did it for a little while longer. And I think we're fine about to
Rodney
end off on
day.
The last. Okay, because he understood what it was we kept reaching for, what it is every 20, 30 years, what we keep reaching out for, what we keep snatching on the very hemline of, but we never can quite grab it for ourselves, and that is the recentering of our reality back. And the reason why we hesitate to recenter is because, in our opinion, Africa ain't doing shit. Our actual nativeness looks dormant. It looks battered. It looks uneducated. From the perspective of what we're being given, so why would we want to realign and get our allegiance back to imagery that we see looks like a whole bunch of little starving babies with swollen bellies, dignitaries stealing money, like X-45.
But that goes back to what Tavis said. So we are submitting ourselves to imagery and understanding that
we have no other recourse to do because the only language we speak is English. So whatever they're feeding us, we're taking on. Now, but accountability in that is the other side, which is that reconnecting, accepting others as they try to reconnect and try, instead of making fun of them, making light of their efforts, being more supportive of them when they do such, you know, just listen. You may learn something. Hell, you may learn something that sparks an interest within you. I was sharing photographs with my uncle the other day because he decided to change my birthday plan. So still going to London, but I'm actually flying into Italy now. So we're going to do Italy as the base and then fly back over to London. So he was like, yo, I want to go to da-da-da while I was there. So I was like, oh, yeah, I've been there. And I started sending him pictures, and he was like, oh, you just showing off. I'm like, no. You know, I'm actually going through this exercise to let you know, like, you know, when we hit it, these are the places we need to go. And he was joking. He wasn't being joking. I was showing off. He was joking. But the other side, as I went through those pictures, though, again, going back to how I started the show, it reinforced just how blessed I've been in this life. Because, again, you're talking about a ghetto kid that was in them streets that has done things that I never, ever, ever thought I would be. I've seen places that I've never, never, never thought I'd be. You know what I'm saying? It's mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. Met people. I've eaten foods. I mean, you name it. Those life experiences. I am a very wealthy man. I ain't got no money in the bank, but I'm a very... But I am rich without a doubt. And I wish that for everybody. I wish that for everybody. And I know everybody is. But I wish it for them. At least to get a glimpse inside of it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the travel bug. You know, many of us, especially those of a certain age, we traveled through the encyclopedia. We found new places in that red, green, gold, blue, whatever color encyclopedia you may have had. We found those places in the encyclopedia. And, you know, we just cracked the book. Read our way through it. Like, oh, man, this sounds like it's nice. Our imagination took us there, and we moved on. To be able to put those two pieces together was awesome. But, hell, through the advent of the Internet and YouTube and all these other things now, shit, you can basically do, hell, with AI and VR, you can basically go any place without ever leaving your damn house. Nowadays, you know what I'm saying? But sticking with the theme of accountability, like, it is our duty. Young folks, older folks, those in the middle, to be about the business of building a community. And when folks step inbounds and are doing great work, we need to support them. When folks step out of bounds and doing negative work, we need to check them. Thomas, you all spoke on your show earlier about infidelity, right? And I was very much pleased by what the sisters had to say about the fact that they were checking one another when their fellow sisters stepped out of pocket talking about, oh, I can't believe that this dude cheated on me. And they were like, girl, what the hell are you talking about? Like, this dude told you, he asked you, he said to you, and you expected different? How or why? Not trying to get stuck there today. We can speak the same about our educational system. Thomas, you were in the classroom. Rashi, you're still in the classroom. You both know that students tend to turn out better
when their parents are involved. Why do you have to beg parents to take stake, to take hold, to be in the know about their children's education? Why? Why?
You know, it's funny you should say that, Lee. So this week for me is parent-teacher conferences. Grades go in Monday. That's one reason why I was late. I was putting in some grades, and I was like, oh, shit. So I ran and told that I could make the show. And I'm going to, as soon as we hang up, go straight back to the system. And I told you what had happened with me, right, that I have 60 mm-hmm. children, and I have 15 black boys at the bottom, all stratified. I'm a fifth-grade teacher, math and science. And all my black boys, no, that's not it. All but one black boy is in red, meaning they are two or more grades behind. And I have one black boy in yellow, meaning he's coming in like in the fourth grade. I have at least four black boys who are cognitively in the kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
So when I say we're not only has a parent not done their job, some of these children have not grown cognitively since kindergarten, but they have no alternative learning plan. Nobody, no doctor ever said, this motherfucker's special. Nothing. And so I'm about to see how they think. And see, this is why they got the right psychopath-ass teacher on their trail right now. Because, see, I have legal right to do a home check. So if they think I'm finna fail, I'm about to pass their son off to middle school, and they think like a kindergartner, and they not finna catch these home lessons, manipulative, family assessments. I'm going to need to, if you can't read, you need to find somebody in your family who can read so that they can read to your son, read with your son. Somebody about to catch these little boys' support and attention, because if not, I may in fact quit this job. I won't be an agent of the state. I won't be the next rung of neglect and abuse for these little black boys. And so it's making me drink an extra 2 and 3 ounce of rum a night. You know what I'm saying? Trying to figure out how I'm going to get these little black boys into I can't get them into the fifth grade. That is actually an unobtainable task. I can get them maybe into the third grade. That right there is enough. It's enough to make me. Yeah, the kid ain't accountable, but at some point you say this is a compromised brain. And so when you start asking a unnetworked, poorly nutritioned brain with poor impulse control to regulate itself, the answer is no, bitch. Get away from me. But that means there have been at least four teachers and at least two parents, at least four grandparents that I know of who have seen this child, and they never asked them to read. They never told them to count up the change. They never asked this motherfucker nothing. And so they will be catching Miss Johnson Edmonds. And I called a lady 5 times this week. I called her a month. She finally called me back yesterday. And I said, ma'am, if you don't come to parent-teacher conference, I'm going to request that I come to you. Because you need to see. And so now what happens with that? When you do that with black parents, they try to avoid you. If you try to do that with white parents, they go to the Board of Education on you. They say you being that you bullying them, that you harassing their family, that you being overly confrontational and building anxiety for education into their students. Nobody is coming back, though, and saying, can I get some money and change? So so I can teach my son, white or black alike, nobody. They either already doing it and they don't want to talk to you about what they doing to teach. They white girls get that learning, though. They orient their household so that the white girl has a chance.
Well, they say
I don't know why they pushing white boys into athletics. All the white boys I take care of are in soccer or baseball camp or some stuff. They push little white boys in, you know, in case they got any kind of compromise, they become they athletes. They say he ain't no engineer, so let me get him throwing this ball.
Well, they say education is built around the education truly of white girls, not white boys, yeah. Not black girls. Not black boys, because that's why they're still set up on the farmer's almanac in scheduling. Because the people that's supposed to be the hands in the field, they don't really want them to be educated, but they do want the mothers of tomorrow to be educated so that they can teach their children to be great worker bees. With that being said, my whole thing is, you know, let's just address a better way of doing schooling. And it has to become more of a partnership for the schools and the parents and not a daycare. I was just talking to a leader at a black school yesterday, and I was telling them about the things that I come across working with families that are trapped in child protection services and how most of those children are referred, or not, shouldn't say referred, they're reported by schools. And the school's not really understanding the situations that they put families in when these children are removed. And typically, you all, I just want to be honest, the people who are getting their children removed are not those who are beating their children, who are sexually molesting their children, or neglecting their children. No, it's typically people who are impoverished, and they may be a little bit uneducated in what the laws may be, but most of them are not bad parents or bad people. With that being said, if schools took more of a partnership with the entire family, not just the child, and they had services in place in the school to these families with resources in the community versus the counties, you would see more thriving children. Those kids that can't pay attention typically are living in areas where there's shootings, there may be abuse going on in the home. They may have a lot of other things that's going on. But if the school could partner up with the parents, not make it optional for parent-teacher conference, not make it optional for parents who are doing a bevy of things, and giving the caveat to parents that, hey, we're not going to report you for what's wrong. We want to work with you, but don't dare, when we call ourselves reaching out to you, trying to help and assist you, don't pull the game of you're going to put your kid into another school. At that point, we will report you, because at that point, we can't help that kid. And that's where you have to draw the line. But you have to really get into that.
No, but not to cut you off, but how do we get to that point? How do we hold folks accountable?
We have to make a demand. Like this is the thing, because this is my pushback on charter schools. Charter schools leave like MCI, AT&T, and Sprint. Remember those days? Everybody's calling you up,
yeah.
Say, you switch to me, I'll give you $50. Remember those days?
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
switch, you get $50, yeah. And after a while, you switch back, you get another $50, right? That's how charter schools are. Like, they're public schools, but they're not really public schools. And they only stay in business by having asses in the seats. So it's sort of like a bank. All the kids are just numbers. We don't care if they have IEPs. We don't care if we even have staff to deal with the IEPs. We just need asses in the seats. When you have people operating from that place where it's just children are just numbers, staff is just numbers, you're not going to have a lot of education going on. Education facilities are supposed to operate different from the bank. It's supposed to operate different from a call center or other regular jobs. That's not happening. Americans are not demanding that. And part of that, y'all, is our politicians. Politicians want to not only go into K through 12, but they even wanted to go on colleges and kind of stymie the level of intellect, discussion, and debate that's supposed to take place on campus, i.e., the conversation with Palestine, with this billionaire saying, hey, those students that signed this thing supporting the Palestinians, let us know who they are so we can make sure they don't get jobs in the future. This is letting you know that they are stymieing education and that's top down. Schools have to say when they are, you know, the first when you're enrolling, these are our expectations. These are the things that we're going to hold you to. And if you don't, then, hey, listen, there's going to be ways that we're going to be here. Our role is the safety and education of the kid, but we also want the families to be healthy. We can't educate the kid without helping you. And if that's too much for you, this is not the school for you. But we have to start holding our families accountable, too. Once you have people that is willing to help you in life, going back to what we're talking about, the relationship thing, when we know what's better and people have a choice to say, hey, you can either drink this alkaline water or you can drink this Pepsi, the people that's choosing to drink Pepsi, when they're dying of diabetes, we can't say, damn, that's messed up. The reality of it is we got to say, yo, you made a choice.
I don't understand it personally because I have a son into the district that I teach in. I show up, I ask my son, let me see it. I'd like to see an artifact, please, of this week's learning. Just show me something, anything, where you learned something this week. I don't care what subject, what teacher. Show me an artifact of understanding. And if you can't even, it don't take but 10 minutes. It really, I mean, depending on whether or not there's something wrong with how your child reads, they should be able to read something to you in 10 minutes. And here's the other thing I want us to understand. If you really give a damn and you don't have no kids, you still got to find your way into the system. If you are old and retired and you just sit there rotting away, you need to find your way into the system. If you know, you know that your personal family is pulling the statistics of a school down, you need to pick somebody in your family who is capable of being nowhere from 9 to 4 or 8 to 3. They don't have to be anywhere, and they are the new cognitive. You go to the classroom or you go to another room, and when your scholars and your family are taking that building into torment, they say, we got a scholar who need a break, and they bring them to your ass. And you sit down and you teach them and they'll get tired of going to grandma in that special room. They'll get tired of seeing their auntie every day. It will have an effect. It will have an effect. Now, the closest we got to it in our school, we got a bunch of retired elder. Of course, they're all white. It's all white and two Hispanic males who come and they read to the third. They let the third grade read to them. They support third graders in a reading process, but it is quite chaotic. They do it in the hallway, all lined up against the wall. So while we're trying to get to it, I don't think we're doing it right. I don't think we do it in a way that supports actual real literacy. And so it has to happen in the first classroom. Where's the first classroom, Mr. Rodney? The primary classroom is the home. The parent is the first teacher. Everybody else is secondary. And if they can't see that, if they don't see that not only are that they fucking up, it's not we fucking up, you fucking up first, making us have to start at zero instead of start with a 5-year-old mind. We get in 5-year-olds who think like newborns. They still boo-booing on themselves. They eat the glue. They fight. They punch adults. They scream at the top of their lungs and writhe around on the floor. So we supposed to teach them A, B, C. First of all, y'all supposed to teach them A, B,
yes,
C.
Yes, you can. I've done it. I've taken on a class with kindergartners, first graders, second graders, and the teachers have quit before I got there. And my expectations walking to the door in every classroom I've been to parents, your child is going to leave 2 grades prepared. This is what it is. I was in a school where they said, we're not doing homework. I said, the hell we ain't. In my classroom, everybody does homework. If you're behind, how you going to get ahead? And what I told the parents who kids were not getting ahead at the end of the year, hey, you sided with the school.
You said your child wasn't going to do homework. Well, don't get upset the rest of these kids are doing algebra in kindergarten and your kid can't. I sent the work home. I sent the package there. I worked with the kids in school. I kept kids during recess to help them out and forgone my lunch break. It's all about the attitude of the person that is delivering the education. The problem is that people really don't want to do actions. And this is why I tell people, schools are not a place for black men at all, because you're going to get frustrated. When you want to do and everybody else want to talk, that's where the rubber meets the road. And when people would ask me, hey, Mr. Barry, why is your classroom door always closed? I said, do you ever see any of my scholars in the principal's office? No. Well, because it's expectations, and they know it. They know what I expect when they walk through the door. So we don't need the door open. If you come into our classroom, whether you're an educator or you're another student, you will match the energy in my classroom. Or if not, I don't care if it's my boss, I'm going to ask you to leave. That's how serious you have to be with educators. And we don't have people like that. And that is part of the problem. It's not hard. I'm telling you, I worked in some of the worst schools, and every classroom I've ever been in, and this is not to toot my own horn, when I left, the students were better, but part of it was because I set the expectation and I raised the bar. Mm. If you can't read, when you leave me, you will learn how to read. When students act up, I tell my students, hey, yo, it's like a bad TV show. Y'all know what that means? They said, no. What does that mean, Mr. Barry? Well, if ain't nobody watching, they're going to take it off the air. If he's in the back acting a fool, just focus on this right over here. When you guys stop paying him attention, watch how he sits down. And it does. And I got so good with every classroom I was in, my students would tell other students the expectations when they walked in the room. When my substitute came in, they didn't have to do much because my students were already on a regimen that they understood. It's just all about how we want to go about it. And I'll just leave it at this. When we start holding parents, And notice what I said about the parents who were not having their kids doing homework. When they came with every excuse possible, I've heard a mother say she was going to college, so how could she help her son with the work? I had some parents saying that they work, they're busy, they're this, they're that. And what I would always say is, I get it. That's why I work overtime with your kids. So all you have to do is just make sure they do the work. I've already gave every tool possible for them to learn by themselves how to do it. You just have to hold them accountable for the routine. That's your job as a parent, not mine. Once you start saying that and you don't allow them to place that failure on you, then the parents will step up or they'll get ghosts. And guess what? We can't save everybody, and nor should we try to.
Well, I received anger. I reported this week that those boys were in kindergarten for math cognitively, and a lot of black women were like, what you talking about? That boy up there playing games, he can read, he can add. They are in abject denial about the actual capabilities of their sons. And I'm going to have to fight back, Mel. Yes, you will get frustrated, but there is no needle movement like there is with the black man in the classroom. Everybody respects a respectable black man. The tone of his voice lets you know to clamp that bullshit down. And so, and then the taller or the more statuesque the man is, it's just a matter of I need to sit down and act like I got some sense. So I'm fighting back on that idea of the schoolhouse not being a place for the black man. In fact, I feel like that has been the missing link. The black man in the schoolhouse is the recipe for success in the future.
But here's the issue with that, though. It goes back to where we started. Again, the economics of the affair. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure more and more brothers would love to teach. But there's a couple of things. The economics isn't there. And we ain't putting up with that bullshit from them damn kids. So, you know, if you don't want me to knock Lil Johnny out, you better teach Lil Johnny some goddamn home training because you ain't going to buck up at me. See, this is the difference. We ain't just going to take that. Now, Thomas, is not the exception to the rule. I'm sure that he learned over time how to control himself, so on and so forth. But you put two main bros in there, some bros going to act out. Some little kid going to get knocked the fuck out. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be more and more YouTube videos, more and more IG posts of some kid getting knocked out or some kid getting cussed out. And what I don't think white America wants is that black male having that type of, let's say, influence over there, white kids. You know what I'm saying? Because you mess around and you may very well find the hell out. You know what I'm saying? So I don't disagree with that. I don't think the money's there. I don't think most brothers have the attitude to do that type of work either, though, to be honest, because you have to have a lot of patience. And you have to have a lot of understanding and empathy. I'm not saying we're not capable. I'm just saying I don't think a lot of us have tapped into that side of us that we are necessarily prepared to jump into a classroom like, okay, I can teach. Bro.
Man, that's right. No.
You better sit your little $5 ass down before I make a change.
But Lee, it's not the students that would drive men out. Let me say this clear. Men like yourself, Rodney, I'm not saying I'm a one-on-one. I know a plethora of brothers who could go in and educate without training, by
right.
the way. Because if you either got it or you don't. What typically happens is
yeah.
it becomes more like a reality TV show than it does a job. Not with the scholars, but with everyone else.
Amen.
And that's why I left it alone. Because the students, they're going to, and I think I said this before about my daughter going to school in Maryland compared to Minnesota. My daughter was not thriving here. She wasn't. She didn't like school. Any excuse she would give her to stay home, she would stay home. She moved out to Prince George County. She's going to school there. And my daughter's consistently on the honor roll since she moved out there. I asked her, were the teachers nice? She told me no. I said, are they nice compared to the teachers in Minnesota? She said, no, teachers in Minnesota are nice. I said, so how are you doing better? She says, because they have an expectation. They let you know what it is, and it's easier to learn that way. Everything here, it was you could or you can't, it's up to you. And part of the problem with education, it's way too nuanced today for students. It's almost the curriculums are written by the kids who could not excel in past schooling. And we're trying to do this systemly where it's like each student has its own custom way of learning. That sounds good on paper. Get in the classroom, try to make that work. 28 students, one teacher possibly, two teachers possibly, and even two teachers with a para. You cannot do individualized learning at a successful rate the way that they're marketing this across the nation. That's why most schools are failing. Education is a way, that's a part of national defense too. You and Brother Rodney, y'all know this. Schooling and indoctrination
uh-huh.
is how nations make it. Imagine if you got indoctrination that does not make a uniform way across the board. This is why kids don't write cursive anymore. This is why the math problems are not just as simple as 2 plus 2 anymore. They're training kids for jobs that kids ain't even going to be able to do. That's the problem with education. And as long as they're still giving checks, and everybody can say, I ain't robbed nobody to get this check, is going to happen. Teachers have to take more pride. Educators have to take more pride. Stand up, buck the system, get out of these pseudo-curriculums, and just get the teacher and holding the parents accountable. I don't give a damn if you can read or not, ma'am. You should want your daughter, sir, your son, to be able to read or add better than you. That should be the expectation, and we shouldn't settle for any excuses from anyone, from the student to the parent to the folks at the schools. Everybody is tripping.
Huh. Right.
And I know I'm tripping. Do you do symposiums? Can I hire you to come to my district and do this, do exactly what you just did. I think I can get you up to $200.
Man, I'm about to be busy.
I know, right?
And, hey,
right.
Hey, listen, I'm about to be busy.
Really? I don't roll out of bed, but
I mean,
250 pounds.
Hey, bro, listen, I'm still in the bed by that time.
I ain't even warmed up yet.
But Sister Rashi, I say that because the school that I worked at, I'm sorry, I remember CNN doing a big story, a weekly series with Soledad O'Brien on this school. And it was a young man. His family is kin to my family, and they're from South Bend like me. And I remember them talking about this kid. This is before I worked at the school. They talked about how well he was doing. So I started teaching second grade. He's in the fourth grade classroom. On CNN, you would have thought he was struggling. He had it together, right? I get there, and I'm noticing his behavior, and the staff is calling him the golden child. Don't mess with him. He was on CNN. He's the golden child. Brother Lee, Rodney, Brother Lee and Rodney, Sister Rashi, this brother couldn't read a lick in fourth grade. But that CNN story didn't make it seem that way. Then I also found out after the teachers in Atlanta got busted for helping with the nationalized testing, the school I was working at,
they
were doing it prior. Yeah, they were doing that prior before I got there. So all of these kids that everybody was lying about they could read and do whatever, they were struggling. The class I inherited, most of those kids were struggling to read on a first grade level, let alone a second grade level. When I got in with my no-nonsense policy, my students were only second to another class, another all-girls school that was a part of the network by a 0.5%. I took them from worst to second best in 1 year. But I'm telling y'all, it was all about expectation, discipline. When you get to a black school and they're telling you how black it is, but the Black History Month program is in May and not February, you start understanding the politics that people play with our kids in education. But it's because no one's holding anyone accountable. The community turns their eye. We say, we'll let white folks educate them, or white folks can't do it. We'll let black people do it. It don't matter if it's black people acting like white folks, whatever. We are falling in between the cracks because, Lee, there is no accountability. And when we talk about finance, right, unfortunately in our communities, the people who are making the most money are the people that's robbing everybody with our ski mask.
Well, I would like to let y'all know that I will be holding people accountable. I would like to be able to report out what that looks like, what that looked like for me next week. So just cross your fingers that I'm not fired by the time I finish telling people that they've been out here getting whoopee this year. Okay, like their children are being fed into a sausage maker, and the only thing that's left out of the machine is an arm, a leg, and half of their brain. So we'll see.
Well, Sister Rashi, this is the best way I say hold people accountable. What my whole thing was, I went into the old, you know, Lee and Roddy, y'all know this from being from the East Coast. I took the old 5% model, and I said, we're going to show and prove. That's all it was with my class. I'm going to show and prove. Mm. So when I talk in meetings, you know who the hell I am. I went from who is that guy to, oh, that's Mr. Barry. Because the work speaks for itself. And that's really what we have to do. We just have to get into it. Tap into the spirit of these kids. I learned boys are competitive. So whether it's reading, writing, or math, I made it competitive. You're going to compete. Or if you don't compete, you're going to get beat. And I gave incentives to compete. They said that wasn't the way to go. I said, well, what does the numbers say? The numbers say that the kids love this thing called Math Wars. And they up there and they going hard for math. Oh, the number says the kids, they can't read. Okay, man, listen, we're just doing who, what, where, when, and why. I'm going to read. They're going to tell me these things, and then they're competing against each other on a team basis. So now they're learning how to listen. Okay, now y'all did that. Now read for yourself, and then we're going to get back over here, and we're going to compete again.
again. We're going to split up the teams, and y'all going to tell me what you read and break it down. And we're doing this in a classroom setting. Kids ate it up. It was easy. It was easy to do it that way. Same thing with my kindergartners. Let me get you on the board. You know how to draw numbers. Let's get you up here and start doing it. Once you can draw numbers and I can show you how to count, I can show you how to add. I can show you how to subtract, too. You like cookies? Let's do it with cookies. You like candy? Let's do it with candy. I just took what the kids liked. I tapped into their energy, and that's what allowed me to elevate them. I didn't come in with a, you going to do it my way or it's the highway. What are y'all into? Cool. Well, let me match your fly, and then I'm going to elevate you to get you where I want you to be, and then you can show from there everything else. And that's all it was. And I told them they're black. The black man and woman was the first on the planet. We're the closest thing to God. We made math. We made the letters. We made the alphabets. And you don't have no excuses. And once they got that beat into their head on a day-to-day basis, there was no excuses given by the kids because they knew who they were.
It's funny you say that because I did one-on-ones with my staff this week. Two of them said something about me. Three of them actually said they wish I would have come in first to look and learn before I took the reins and managed. And to all of them, I had the same response. First off, that's not what a leader does. You know, I came in to lead, so I was a leader day one. Thank you. Part two of that is when you're in command. I can make mistakes along the way. I will make mistakes along the way. That's okay. My job is to make choices and make decisions. Nobody makes every perfect choice and perfect decision. Nobody does that. You learn, you adapt, and you overcome. But lastly, I said, did I not come here for the first 2 months and not say a word? I just asked questions. First couple of weeks, I just observed and asked, well, you all do it like this? You all do it like that? I took notes. And then after that, I started, hey, you told me 3 weeks ago that you do this. Why do you do that? Why? And I built out from there. Another one told me, though, something that I already knew. It was a north and south thing. My Yankee tail came down south. My Yankee tail was a black Yankee tail, and I'm telling these folks what to do and what they cannot do. Some of them just don't like it, period. And I get it. I totally understand it. But when you tap into or when you ask people what they and you leave from that, I do feel, Brother Barry, that you get a much better result. I do think that you get more out of them than you're really putting in because they will tap back and be like, okay, well, I'm going to show him or her or they or them or it or what, you know, whatever your pronoun is nowadays, you know, it's a specific pronoun. What I'm thankful for is your continual push, Sister Rashi, in the classroom. And Brother Barry, though you stepped out of the classroom, your insistence on still reaching back and helping others. I'm grateful to that. I want to transition, though, down the line a little bit because I want to see what the theme of accountability. But in that, we've had two revelations throughout this week, one on Thursday and one on Friday. Well, actually, three, counting another. The third was early in the week when the Justice Department announced that they wanted to revisit the sentencing for the Proud Boys. The second being Thursday when a plea deal was struck with former Trump attorney Sidney Powell. This is the release the Kraken lady. She was going to release the Kraken. She struck a plea deal guilty on 6 counts, all non-felony, which she received 12 months probation for each count. A part of her deal, she had to write an apology letter to the people of Georgia. She had to hand over documents, all documents. She had to tell everything that she knows, and she had to testify against any and all co-defendants that she was called to testify against. That was Thursday. That was a bombshell in and of itself. We went nuclear on Friday. On Friday, Kenneth Chesborough, the fake elector dude, pled guilty to one felony count. A part of his plea deal also was probation, and he had to hand over any documents and text messages to include text messages, emails that he received. And two, he needs to testify against any and all co-defendants that he was called to testify against. Now, when two lawyers flip on your ass, you in trouble. You in trouble. So that happened later in the day yesterday. I wasn't able to make a call. That was the spark of the conversation between Rodney and I last night. Because early in the week, I called Rodney and I apologized to him because I really hadn't talked to him much. And I was like, man, I'm sorry, you know, haven't really had a chance to talk to you. Rodney and I used to talk like every day. And I said, bro, like, it's crazy. That's when we were talking about the Proud Boys sentence. And I was like, man, you know, I mean, you called the fact that this is going to be the biggest RICO case in our nation's history. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but if it does, it's going to be wild. He said, man, Lee, I'm sticking with that. I still think it's going to be the biggest RICO case that we've ever seen in our nation's history. And you started at the bottom and you worked your way up to the top. Again, this was like 2 days before the first attorney flipped. And then when the second one flipped, I was like, bro, Roddy, what did you think about that when you saw the second attorney clip?
It's a normal progression. If you're an attorney, you have a pretty good idea of how these processes work, and you know that once the first person made that deal, there's only so many deals that are going to be left to be made, and you know that under the terms of that deal that that person is saying they're going to tell everything they know. And that attorney is smart enough to know that that first person knows stuff about me. So do I want to take the chance to fight it? Because who else can collaborate? Because there was somebody else who had already flipped. So it was just, and there may be more who flip, because these three people together can corroborate a lot of the prosecution's evidence and shed light on more evidence. They can also tell them, oh, yeah, you're looking over here and you found this, but don't forget to look over there. Oh, you got us 19. But there was 25 of us, you know. And you got the two people, you got the guy that was in charge of the fake electors, which they said that wasn't true, but now the guy admits that it's true. You have the woman, the Kraken lady, who is the originator,
Crazy Kraken,
for public consumption of most of this stuff that got broadcast on Fold News and Newsmax, right? And she has said everything I said was a lie. Everything.
Wow.
Not only is everything that I said was a lie, but these are the people who knew that it was a lie and still went along with it. That brings about culpability. So, yeah, the lawyers were just smart enough to know it. But now those other defendants, like let's say Mark Meadows, there's like, wait a minute, I had meetings with them. I can no longer claim, oh, no, I don't know anything about it. Because they can say on this date, or they can pull up the text messages, they can pull up the WhatsApp from their phone, because maybe he don't give them his phone. So those people who understand how the system works, and most of them are lawyers, they see the handwriting on the wall. Fonnie Willis did an outstanding job in charging all 19 of them and then using the RICO statute. And just like in any mob crime, You pick up the dude on the street. Then you get the dude in the car. You get the person that's in the little office to tell you about the person that's in the big office to tell you about the person in the big with the biggest desk. They just work their way up. The little people that plead out, they always get the best deals because that entices and incentivizes the next person. Oh, wow, I know that person was guilty because they're the ones who told me. But they got they got 6 years probation and a $5,000, that's it? And an apology letter? Huh. Considering I could be getting 5 years or 10 years in the big house, it's kind of like an easy decision. So I wish I could claim some type of genius on it, but it's just a natural progression of most RICO cases, especially RICO cases this size, this public, with this much discovery against it.
Hmm.
So look for Mark.
Yeah,
Meadows.
I am. So you think he's the next chip?
He may have been the first chip. We just don't know about it because, remember, he disappeared for a minute. And when he disappeared, a lot of stuff started coming out that seemed to be stuff that he would have said. You got Cassidy Hutchinson that has put out some things that they've been able to corroborate. And see, this stuff is, I hear some people saying, well, it's a he said, she said. Well, it's only he said, she said if it's me and you. But if you said I said a thing, and Thomas said I said a thing, and Sister Rashi said I said a thing, then it's no longer he said, she said.
There's
corroborating evidence.
Right.
There's proof. Oh, and then you pull up text messages. You know, you pull up, hey, I wasn't even in the state. Well, we got these receipts from your charge card at the Watergate Hotel. So they just start putting this stuff together, and they put so much of it together that most of these people are starting to realize I cannot lie my way out of it, and more than likely I won't be able to wait till the POTUS takes office and defunds these people, and we take the House and the Senate, and we start closing down departments that have something to do with these people. You know, even though this is a state case, now we're finding out that some of this state stuff is going to the federal case. And these guys, they don't want to deal with both of those things. And it's hard to make a deal with one, right, because you know you're guilty. Because now the feds know, see, they just copped a plea over here. So we got the same thing against them over here. So what are they going to do? So there's just too many screws that can be turned on them, and they are turning them. And Fani is just beating them with facts and evidence, which is foreign to MAGA people. She's killing them with it. And they're realizing they're on their deathbed, and they're looking for a way out. And the only way out of this is to confess. But the window of opportunity for them to do that is shortening, which is putting more pressure on somebody to, like, look, I want to get this deal before the deals run out. And so that's why I think you're going to see maybe one or two more. And don't forget, with the fake electors, they have somebody in my state of Nevada, the chairman of the Nevada State Republican Party, who was given limited immunity. The feds raided his offices. I think they might have raided his house too. Shortly after that, he went quiet. When they go quiet, that's always kind of a hint something is up.
The next time he turns up, he's
at a federal court, and then we find out he has limited immunity. Well, what does limited immunity mean? Limited immunity means we got something on you. We know, you know that we got something on you. But if you squeeze on, if you tell on these guys, you go into jail. You're going to have to pay something because your stuff is so jacked up. But if you spill the beans, we're not going to give you, you know, instead of putting you in the big house, we're going to put you in the cupcake prison, right? So that's anytime you see limited immunity, you know things are bad. And that's going to prove the conspiracy, because these people can say, yes, it was so-and-so from the White House. That corroborates the story of the person that's in Michigan that's a fake elector, that the person in Pennsylvania was a fake elector that decided to turn states evident, that the person in Georgia who decided to turn states evident, again, they corroborate the story, and they find out there was more people involved. So there's a direct through line, and that's why, once again, I believe in both of these cases, you're going to see more people trying to take a plea. Some of them won't get it, but some of them will, because they're after the big fish, and he knows it. The other final point about this, is that Fannie Willis now doesn't have to take those people that confess. She don't have to take them to trial. So that means the people who haven't done it yet are still trying to figure out, well, Dak, what does she have? She got them, but does she really have something on me? So, but she didn't have to show her hand. So that makes
sense. And do you want to take that chance?
There you go.
Do you want to take that chance in the court of law?
But you got the Kraken lady. And the Kraken lady says her plea deal is she cannot say, oh, you know, I don't remember anymore. I got my plea deal. I'm good. No. Her plea deal is, no, you sing like a canary and you sing till you get laryngitis. You have no choice. And if you do not, your sentence will take effect immediately. And maybe those charges that were suspended, we add them back, and you already pled guilty to them. You're going straight to jail. All
right. So fellas, that's why the crazy part about it is you got to have something to give, because if you don't, typically they hit you with the hardest amount of time. And it is a house of cards at this point, because when they start tumbling, you want to make sure you land on the table, okay? You don't want to be on the floor. On the floor means you're gonna see some football numbers up, and that's not good. And the other side of it too is, which I think is kind of crazy when you really think about this, how impulsive people probably were acting. 45 wasn't gonna be president for forever, so I don't know why you would play this game with this guy. Like, he was really about to come on and be a full, dictator for the rest of his life. This is all interesting to see it play out. Now, I still stand on the side of, if they going to cook them till it's done. Let's have no pink meat. Let's make it well done. And you cook all the way to the top. So that's my stance on it. This guy was talking fake news left and right. I feel like the reality of it is they have to see this all the way through, no matter what. Go all the way with it. So cheers to them for taking that step, brothers, because I want to see I want to see those clowns dance.
I was on the fence about how effective this would be. Rodney brought up the good point about, she doesn't have to show her hand. I brought up the fact, too, now there are less trials to be had. Does that entice the government to ask for a speedier trial in the Trump case? Because now the calendar isn't as full. Can they move his – well, are they going to go and say, well, we would like, if possible, to move the case forward. Because there hasn't been a trial set yet. I know he waived his right to a speedy trial, but with no date set yet, and, again, less cases down to be tried, do they go and push for, docket is kind of clean. Let's plug them in here. You know what I'm saying? So that part, to me, now, is the most interesting part. Not who flipped as much anymore, because, dog, when you got two lawyers hooked on your ass, like, you fried, died, laid aside. Then,
that's what I'm saying.
District Court of D.C. ruled yesterday that the linchpin in the case is that the conspiracy part is applicable. Like, they tried to throw it out, they being Trump's defense, they tried to throw it out. It was like, no, it can be used in this case, and it's been the basis that the Proud Boys and others have been tried on as well. But yeah, man, it's real, man. Now the case will probably go to Supreme Court, but I don't know if Roberts wants to touch it. To be honest with you, I don't know if he wants to touch that. I wouldn't, not with all this ethics shit floating around right now. I wouldn't touch it. I would let it be. Whatever the lower court decides, I'm serious. I would punt it. I would punt it. Now, again, don't know what he's going to do, but I would punt it. Like, we ain't hearing that case. Whatever the lower court decided, there it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
No, sorry, I'm sorry, Rossi. What were you saying?
I had tried to see your stance on a different point. I didn't know you were going to go back into more depths on that. So I wanted to get your opinion on another matter.
Go ahead. What is it?
All right. So I wanted to see how you felt about all that shuffling for the speaker role, only to have that gentleman that everybody thought was a shoo-in 2 weekends ago not come up with enough support, actually broker the deal.
Jim Jordan? Oh, Jordan? So the Republicans said no. 3 votes up, 3 votes down. And they were like, we are not going through another McCarthy stretch. So they pulled Jim Jordan. They pulled support for Jim Jordan from the House speakership race. So, again, it goes to what I thought it was always going to go to. The Republicans are either going to pivot and say, Democrats, here you go. Y'all can have it because we ain't touching this shit. Or they're going to try to form a sort of coalition to move governance forward. Now, I don't know what the hell that looks like because in my lifetime, I'm not aware of us ever doing such. But I'm pretty sure it's written somewhere that it can happen. But this is going to be interesting. And I say that not just in the not meaning the way I normally say, oh yeah, this is really going to be interesting because you know this also is an election year, so that's the interesting part about it. How do they maneuver and move legislation forward, the country forward? Hell, again, they just need to do and approve a budget. That's not even done yet. You know, the CR is running out of steam. It is coming up for expiration within the next couple of weeks. You can't elect the damn speaker to move the budgetary priorities of the government forward. Then you talk about aid to Ukraine. You talk about aid to Israel. We can talk about that separately in a couple minutes here, how folks feel about Israel and Hamas. But these are real things. You're talking about mobilizing troops. The Navy is on the move. The Navy is on the move in Asia. The Navy is on the move in the Middle East. Other troops have been tapped and told that they need to be on the ready. Things are happening regardless of the dysfunction that the GOP is now exercising in the House of Representatives, and we need to get our shit together. We need to get our collective shit together.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, man, it's based off of just unfounded dogma, right? And the most of it is rooted in hate. Like, this is the power of hate. This is the power of hate. But let's keep in mind, the country was founded in hate. as much as we try to make it out to be this glorious story, it was founded in hate. Because look at what they had to do to the natives as well as to the Africans to make it into what it is. And we're seeing that same hate right now being able to pretty much dissolve most of the democracy that was put in place for this capitalistic ideology. And capitalism is just pretty much who's stronger. That's what capitalism is. It's either who's stronger or who got the most money, and that's what it is. What I think was crazy about the Speaker of the House situation is that we're going to go and look at these polls, and Americans are going to still play this role like this. And I'm like, where is the split when you see one side just can't govern? At what point do you say, hey, listen, we can deal with the other side. We just have to tell the – and here's the thing for the Democrats. Well, we're talking about the Republicans. Get out of far left field. You're going to have to meet the majority of the people where the majority of people at. The same fringe element that is dissolving the Republican Party will sooner or later dissolve the Democrat Party, because most people who once voted for the Dems who are now thinking about voting for the Republicans, it's only because of the fringe element that they don't want to be associated with. And so I just think that once we get back somewhere near the center, I think things on the governance level will be better. And once again, every week I'm coming on, I'm saying it, bring back pork barrel spending so that these people have a reason to negotiate with each other and sit down and get some policy done.
But can we do? Is pork barrel spending sustainable in the long run? You know, Fox Bush is
out of hand. Sustaining.
I didn't hear what you
said. I said we were sustaining. Don't get me wrong. The crazy jets that couldn't fly in stealth when it rained, that was stupid. The bridge to nowhere, that was silly. You got to have controls on things like that, right? Like, you don't want to just take the money because you can take the money. The other side of it, when we really just step back and ask ourselves a question, we're going to send how much money over to Ukraine, how much money over to Israel and other places for their disagreements in policies and politics. Yet, our own, we won't spend that kind of money to solve our differences to get people at the table. So while some of it could be wasteful spending, if it saves more than it hurts, I'm with the savings.
So here's the thing about pork barrel spending is you have to have serious people who are trying to do serious things for their community at home. So let's take somebody like Jim Jordan, who has never passed a piece of legislation in his, 14, 15, how many year career in Congress. Never. Take Marjorie Three Names. I don't think her name is on anything other than maybe some, things to keep her from stalking people. So look at Matt Gaetz, or Gates, whichever way is the proper pronunciation of his name. What have these people done? Let's go to Lauren Boebert, Miss Grab Her Boyfriend in the Pants and Get Her Boo Pulled Out.
At the child
in
place.
The middle of a
child place.
What normally is a nice social event, go into the theater. If you look at Gomer, you look at Comer, you look at Kennedy, I think it's Gomer's people, his own family, have rejected him and said he's crazy. So these people have passed no legislation. They bring nothing back to their home state. These are part of the MAGA movement, the ultra-right, the former Tea Party. These are the people who are creating the most noise and the most dysfunction. These are the people that the so-called serious Republicans are trying to punch in the face and being held back by other Republicans, right? So pork barrel spending may work with some, no doubt. But for the people who are causing the most dysfunction, they don't pass anything or bring anything home right now. So how can you threaten them to vote your way to do something that they haven't been doing and don't really seem to care about governance?
Well, brother, I would say that's where their opponents can use that. Listen, these people are in states where people are suffering. When you start saying that, hey, this dude wanted to be an adolescent instead of an adult at the table and didn't want to reach across the aisle to bring back to his constituency, not his party. That's when you remove the party conversation. Right now, everybody's operating in party politics. It's easy to. You took away the one carrot that they had to actually have to work together. You cut the rope. And nobody, when you're running against them, because everybody has an election. Everybody has an election. You can no longer say that, hey, you could have brought in $200 million to build this wing, this extra wing at this hospital to treat cancer. Hey, constituents care. What's that noise? Constituents care about those types of things. And I feel like that is part of what we're missing. I just feel like we're at a table where everybody's just saying, I'm with the red side, you with the blue side, let's throw up our gang sets. And that's just what they do. You might have some older gangbangers who are saying, I remember the days when we used to all hang out at the park together. And they can work on things. But with anybody who came in after 2011, those folks are not used to working across the aisle. They haven't had to. It has been typically just vote the party line. And I think pork barrel spending makes people have to grow up, Lee. I do. It should be checks. It should be balances. We shouldn't have crazy stuff. But there should be things that make people say, nah, my man, why you saying this, and this, you missed the chance to do something for your people back home. This is a common sense bill. We're talking health care for everybody. Get your ass in line.
But the check is, again, I apologize for keep going back to the beginning of the show. The check is the people, right? The voters. But if you have the voters running around not being able to invest time in order to apply that check, there will be no check. And we all know that power unchecked will go crazy. And these folks will go crazy and off the rails sooner rather than later because they understand that once people figure out what the hell they're doing, either they're going to fully rise with them or the majority of the people, you're right, are going to pick them up.
What is that? Did you put the music on me?
Hello?
No, I did not.
You jammed, brother?
Yeah. I'm not playing anything.
Is that Sister Rashi?
Did somebody put us on hold? Hold on, let me see.
Rashi, is that you?
Nope, I'm
okay,
here.
Yeah. Rashi, was that you?
So,
what did you hear? I don't think so. I had clicked over.
But damn, hold music. Like we was in the elevator. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Somebody put us on hold, man.
You know,
please forgive me, my son. Okay, so this is the problem. Please, I apologize. My son is a youth ambassador. They're planting. Oh, I should have told you that. My son is planting trees today in the urban park. So they are, you know, doing their part to become eco smart. He's putting trees in the ground. He's working with other youth, but he don't want to catch the bus home. He want me to go catch him when he get off work. And so in the spirit of, you know, cooperation, but, you know, when a black woman's son call, I don't know if you know this, but when black women's sons call, a lot gets put on hold, you know, but I apologize.
No,
for the
whole, We literally know that. No. Yeah, I was trying to put you on mute, but then you muted yourself, but I guess when you clicked over, that came through regardless, but that's cool. Anyhow, where were we at? Because that's so threw everything off. We were talking about pork barrel spending. We were talking about power unchecked. And again, like if they're not checked, they're going to go off the rails, and people are going to kick them out of office. So they are going to go hard in fear of they're going to get kicked out. or they're going to go hard in a negative way, trying to bolster support from a small portion whom are forever loyal to them, i.e. the mega group. That's what they have right now. That's what we're dealing with right
now.
So
let's look at it this way. For the antics of Matt Gaetz, his constituency back home, for the most part, are in support of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie Three name was on, had no committee, had no power other than the power of her mouth, and she's now on committees that deals with classified stuff that she constantly leaks out, but her district with gerrymandering, she will get reelected again. She'll win a primary because they're going to control who gets primary, so they're not going to primary a loyalist and X-45 supporter. So unless there is a Democratic candidate that can convince the people in some of these conservative districts to vote against their party, which is possible, but it is a heavy lift. Now, here's a prediction for you all. There's going to be enough people in swing districts who are going to vote Democrat, assuming that black people vote Democrat. And that's the big if right now. I was talking to two black people yesterday at the gathering who think that President Biden is doing a horrible job, and that X-45 was so good for black people and so good for this country economics, which is kind of factual, right? There are people who don't understand that by us sending billions of dollars to Ukraine is keeping us from spending trillions of dollars and shedding a bunch of American blood on foreign soil. And the same thing goes for what's going on with Hamas right now. So if you have ignorant people that are making the decision, and they're making the decisions based on party line, they're going to make decisions based on party line. I'm predicting that there will be enough people, because some of the gerrymandering has been thrown out by the court. I believe North Carolina is one of them. I think Georgia might be another. I'm not sure about which state.
Alabama.
It is. But there are going to be enough of these states that are going to have a black district where we may see some of these traditional Republican seats flip, and in districts that voted in a larger number for President Biden last election, I believe are going to vote in higher numbers for in this election. And I believe the Democrats will take the House back. They will maintain the Senate plus maybe one or two extra seats. They will maintain the executive. The only thing that the Republicans are going to control is the SCOTUS, and that is going to be under a lot of pressure if the Democrats take everything. But here's the key, though. The key is, will black people, and I'm shaky on this part, will black people think that because gas prices are high right now, because interest rates are high right now, that President Biden is doing such a terrible job that they would rather have the guy come back in office who said he was never going to leave office, that he's going to pass it down to his son, like as if he's a monarch, he's a king, and then to his daughter, or to his daughter and then his son, depending on what he's saying that day. These are the same people who say they support a guy in my state that was going to disenfranchise me of my vote. They still support him. They still support him with the insurrection, because they say it wasn't an insurrection. It was just First Amendment, free speech, and an everyday visit to the Capitol. So if black people do not vote the right way, and yes, for those who say, Rodney, you putting on us, We have saved the world multiple times in our existence. We have saved this country multiple times in our existence. And unfortunately, we're being called on again to save the country and thus the world. It's really just a matter of will we do the right thing?
That's interesting.
Well, in this 5 minutes that we got left, there's a whole lot to unpack. He's trying to kill me. But it goes back to what Thomas said about the democracy and capitalism. Folks are choosing capitalism over democracy. And when they say that he's better, I agree with you. As I sit here looking at my Make Hip Hop Great Again hat, you know, which I have a red one too, and people, when they see me wearing it, they're like, this, and then they read it like, okay. No. But when you simply focus on the dollar, and I understand why, because, you know, it's hard out here. But you can't simply focus on it. It's a holistic approach. And if you take that holistic approach, then I think most people will make another decision. Not saying that Biden is the greatest president in the world, but for what our choices, he was the best one that we had. So that is what it is. Yes, to your point, Rodney, I always see your face. We do need to go to a three-party system and or more than three-party system. But for what we got right now, that's what we got. So that's what it is.
We
got 3 minutes left.
We can't keep asking. So I wanted to say real quick, we can't keep asking us to save the world and not save ourselves. Saving the world don't always mean we're saving ourselves. And that is one of the things that I've always looked at this country and asked, you know, can you be could you be all in with being with the colonizer and then be a fan of the colony or the indigenous or African at the same time? I don't know. I know we've given our last points right here. I just want to say this about what's going on overseas. If you thought the story of David and Goliath in the Bible was a good story, just imagine the idea of David being strapped with an AK-47 fighting Goliath in Goliath's own home village, and Goliath just trying to protect his family with a stick. And we know David has an AK-47. Would you still take the story the same? Would Goliath still be the villain, or would he in turn be the victim compared to David? That's what we're seeing overseas right now. And by the way, if most of you didn't know, biblical sense, Goliath was a Philistine. The Philistine was also similar. The Philistines became Palestinians, if we don't know, and David was symbolic for a Jew. But just imagine David having an AK-47 or a nuclear weapon against the supposed giant. Is that a fair fight? And if it's not a fair fight, what are we really talking about here?
Okay. All right, Rachi, go ahead and make your comment so you can know about your day.
You know, people have been talking about it, and I'm like, I don't know any Afrocentric Palestinians, and I know some very predatory Judeo-Christians and straight-up Ashkenazi Jews. And so when I start orienting myself to the African, I know that this ain't my fault. That's almost my two enemies deciding to fight each other.
Gotcha. All right, sis. Rodney, what you got?
Hello.
Palestinians are the black people of Israel who followed Malcolm instead of Martin, and we're getting a great lesson in what would have happened to us had we done the same. And the Palestinians are not Hamas, and it's okay to support the Palestinians, be against Hamas, like it's okay to support Israel after being attacked by terrorists, but not support Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, their black people.
All right, family. Well, look, you all be good. As we always say about this time, we love you. Ain't a damn thing you can do about it. Thank you for listening live. Thank you for listening later. Until next week. Peace.